Israeli forces on Friday killed at least one Palestinian in the occupied West Bank and wounded dozens of others in the besieged Gaza Strip. The fresh killing came on the heels of a flare-up in the Israeli violence that left four Palestinians killed for alleged anti-Israeli attacks on Wednesday and Thursday. In a separate development, Hamas launched a reprisal attack that killed two Israelis. In tonight's debate, we'll discuss the raging Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which has its roots in the decades-long occupation of the Palestinian lands and thrives on the unrestrained political, economic, and military support that the U.S. has been offering Tel Aviv. Let's now go to Ramallah and get an update from Press TV's Mona Candil on the clashes that erupted earlier in the day. Mona, over to you.
For the second day, Israeli military operation is being carried out across the occupied West Bank. As you were saying, in the evening hours, Israeli soldiers shot dead 16-year-old Mahmoud Nakhli in the city of Al Biri, where clashes were taking place between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian youths near the illegal settlement of Beit Il and the military checkpoint of Beit Il. We're speaking about over 25 Palestinians have been wounded in that area. Also, over 25 Palestinians were also wounded in the city of Nablus, where Palestinians, one day after four people were killed in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and the occupied West Bank, people rushed to the streets close to the military checkpoints and clashed with Israeli soldiers, stressing that Palestinians' only choice now is to be adherent to the choice of resistance, and that Palestinians will never abandon the choice of struggle. Also, in the evening hours, Israeli occupation forces attacked five Palestinians in the town of Sinwad. They were beaten and hit by Israeli soldiers, and they were transferred to a hospital. According to medical sources, they are in serious condition. In the early hours, one Palestinian succeeded to infiltrate into a military tower and attacked an Israeli soldier by hitting him with a stone. He is in serious condition as well. On Saturday, the Palestinian Authority declared a day of mourning, where the shops and institutions will be sealed off. However, the Israeli regime declared that the military operation would continue, and we expect more arrests among the Palestinians, especially that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed to demolish the homes of those Palestinians described to be terrorists who attacked and carried out anti-Israeli operations. We're speaking about Saleh al-Barghouti, Majd Mtar, and Saleh al-Barghouti, Majd Mtar, as well as Ashraf Na'alwa, who was killed in Nablus following a manhunt that continued for over 2 months. But at the end of the day, Palestinians here in the occupied West Bank believe that all this Israeli crackdown failed to intimidate the people or to force them into abandoning resistance against the Israeli occupation.
All right, thanks a lot, Mona Press TV's Mona Candil, joining us from Ramallah. Joining us also in tonight's debate, we've got human rights lawyer and author Daniel Koval joining us from Pittsburgh. And also Professor of George Washington University, Nabil Mikhail, is joining us from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in Pittsburgh, Mr. Kovalik. Mr. Kovalik, when the Great March of Return rally started around, it was 38 weeks ago, if I'm correct, there were numerous cases of condemnation to the Israeli response to these protests. There were rights groups, there were regional political figures. Even the UN chief pitched in to condemn the scope and level of violence. So the Israelis, as expected, just ignored it all. Where do the Israelis get this sense of entitlement, and how can the status quo be changed?
Well, I think they get their sense of entitlement from the United States, which continues to bankroll Israel despite this type of criminality, which, of course, the U.S. just moved its embassy recently to Jerusalem, which was a highly provocative act, but was something that, of course, gave a lot of moral support to not only Israel, but Benjamin Netanyahu, who is particularly militaristic. And so I think that's where the support is coming from and the green light's coming from. I think if we want to put pressure on Israel, we have to put pressure on the U.S. to stop supporting Israel.
Let's bring in Mr. Mikhail, who's joining us from Washington. If you'd like to add anything to that, and also, how can the Israelis, in your opinion, continue this level of aggression and brutality against the Palestinians, both in the occupied West Bank and in the Gaza Strip? Is it just the U.S.'s support, or are there other factors as well?
There is the U.S. support for Israel. I do not think that the United States would criticize an Israeli action to repel any attack coming from the Palestinian territories. And also, it is the deliberation and the calculation of the Benjamin Netanyahu government. They will use utmost force to basically counter any Palestinian attack. I have been reading the newspapers and just surprised that the events escalated suddenly. There is the death of two Israeli soldiers yesterday. Then there is an operation inside the West Bank. I have not heard of an Israeli operation inside the West Bank for a long time. And as I read, it says Ramallah, like say this is the Palestinian headquarters. So it's basically an emboldened Israeli step to put as maximum pressure as possible on the Palestinians and revenge from the killing of Israeli soldiers.
Mr. Kovalik, we've been seeing a lot of determination on behalf of the Palestinian protesters, specifically during the Great March of Return rallies in the face of the live fire policy that the Israelis have been using. It seems at this point that resistance is the only viable option for Palestinians, as they have no trust in the so-called peace process, and also it's the waning trust in their own leadership in the form of the PA. Do you see it in that light as well?
Yes, I agree with everything you just said. I mean, particularly in Gaza, the people there have nothing left to lose. The UN has said that Gaza will be unlivable by 2020. It's probably unlivable now. You have a society with mass unemployment, with lack of basic resources, with an inability for free movement. As Noam Chomsky said, you have the largest open-air prison in the world in the form of Gaza. And so they have nothing left to lose. And so that is why they will resist, and they will continue to resist. And I do think that Israel is becoming desperate because it knows that it is losing support around the world, even amongst the Jewish community. For example, in the United States, young Jews are turning away from Israel, turned off by this maltreatment of the Palestinian people.
Mr. Mikhail, looking at the actions of the current administration in Washington, for example, the U.S. embassy relocation, do you think that the Trump administration is trying to legitimize the Israeli occupation?
The Trump administration is very supportive of Israel, and they promoted the views and the actions of people who could not basically forward some of their ideas in reference to Zionism as an ideology and the security of Israel before. Like, say, let me put this example, which is a hypothetical. Suppose, say, Jimmy Carter was president now. He would not allow Jared Kushner to forward many of his ideas regarding Israel. He would say everything is subject to negotiations. So the Trump administration has sided with Israel, and that advanced the positions of strong Jewish nationalist aspirations and ideas. One of their manifestation is the movement of the United States Embassy to Jerusalem. But again, when you called me and told me to come, I started doing my homework. This is what I read today, and let me submit it to you because it's an indication how the world thinks about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Coming from Australia, from a remote area, are two opposed ideas. One of them is the plan by the Australian government to move its embassy to Jerusalem. At the same time, the Labour Party is preparing an endorsement of a Palestinian state. So you have this split in the attitude between supporting Israel and supporting the Palestinians. and the conflict proliferates. That's actually beyond the scope and the effort of the U.S. government and the Trump administration. Another story, the International Criminal Court has appointed a Palestinian judge or an arbitrator who would be selecting judges to basically render court decisions in reference to many situations that could also involve the United States. And the United States has been adamant not to recognize the sovereignty and the jurisdiction of the ICC. So you have the Arab-Israeli conflict basically manifested, proliferated on so many levels, from court decisions, from recognition of embassies, from support of the different nationalist aspirations. So things are complicated. But back to the West Bank, what I see as the most vital strategic development is that Israel entered the West Bank. That's a very, very daring act. I'm quite sure that even a country like Egypt, which has a peace treaty with Israel, would disapprove of this. But this is the reality of the situation. Israel sees the West Bank as a terrain for its strategic interests. So that indicates that they are not going really to relinquish any right for them in any type of intervention soon, as another round of negotiations are expected to commence.
Mr. Golalek, our guest in Washington pointed out a number of current developments. Would you like to add anything to his comments?
Well, no, except to say that, you know, he's right that there are these divisions even within the United States. Although in the U.S., it should be pointed out that both major parties are very supportive of Israel, are not supportive of Palestinian rights. But the people in the U.S., many people in the U.S., do support Palestinian rights. The BDS movement is growing in the U.S. and around the world. And I do think that sort of pressure is going to help change the situation for the Palestinians.
And Mr. Kowalik, in retrospect, have the recent events like the March of Return rallies, the voting down of the U.S. text at the United Nations General Assembly, just to name a few, have they strengthened the resistance and unity among Palestinians, in your opinion?
Yes, I believe we just lost IFP.
Mr. Kowalik? All right, Mr. Mikhail, would you like to answer that question for us?
Can you please repeat it so I can just...
Yeah, sure. I was talking about the recent events like the March of Return rallies that started 38 weeks ago, the voting down of the United States text at the United Nations General Assembly just a few weeks ago. Do you think that they've strengthened the resistance and unity among Palestinians at this point?
The Palestinians have been expressing their resistance in different forms for 70 years, and this is also, like, say, seconded or has been seconded by Muslims and Arabs and many other countries in different ways. But what interests me here is the fact that there was supposed to be an announcement this month, coinciding with the religious holidays, about, quote unquote, the deal of the century. So I do not know why it was delayed. I mean, it could be announced against the backdrop of Palestinian protest. This is something that the administration of Donald Trump has to be basically cognizant of. But I do not think that the protest will continue. Somehow it will end. So the question is, why hasn't there been any submission of the deal of the century? And what type of reaction would elicit? That's a big question. So I hope some solution could be offered before the end of this year, because I think myself that the Trump administration will be busy in 2019 with two issues in Asia: East Asia, North Korea; West Asia, Iran. So it's just better to move forward on the Palestinian question, considering also that the Syrian crisis is still hanging on with no decisive outcome for any diplomatic initiative. It is losing its momentum to initiate peace there. That's very important as well.
Mr. Kowalik, we were talking about the peace talks. If the so-called peace talks are set out to be a viable option, the U.S., it has its sights set on the so-called deal of the century. Washington has shown that it's not going to be a fair mediator, is it?
Of course not. I mean, especially with this administration, they do not recognize the Palestinians as a sovereign people. They cannot mediate this crisis. They have no moral authority or legitimacy to do that. And moreover, I think, you know, certainly Oslo is now dead. I think the Israelis have made sure of that. And I don't see where peace negotiations can move forward to at this point. It's a very desperate situation the Palestinians are facing. The Israelis seem to just be trying to buy time till, frankly, they can get rid of the Palestinian people and either push them out of Palestine or kill them. I mean, it's a genocide, and I think we have to recognize that.
Mr. Mikhail, what about the insufficient international response, the lack of action from international bodies such as the UN, the EU, the OIC, and most notably the Arab world? It is contributing to the status quo, isn't it?
It is contributing to the status quo, I mean, but at the same time, the status quo is not lethargic because, I mean, Europe has been affected by the Syria crisis. And when you think about the Syria crisis, one of also its sources is the unsettled Palestinian question. I mean, it is a topic that you can handle from different perspectives. Let me just answer that question quickly. I'm seeing here, and there's an acknowledgement of it by the American press, of a growing Russian role. Let me ask this question. Could this, freeze in any peace prospect be shattered by a growing involvement of Russia? It depends. If I hear any statement coming from Moscow about a Palestinian state, perhaps that can be echoed in Washington, D.C. But the question is, what is the scope? What is the scope and the method of submitting a peace proposal now, since the two sides are just adamant not to make any concessions? So it's not even it's not like what was in between Israel and Egypt between 67 and 73, no peace, no war. It's actually more complicated than this because the situation is so precarious. So I hope some movement could happen before the end of the year. If there is some initiative coming from Russia, I would welcome it. I think the Europeans could endorse it. And I hope also that the Trump administration can pick up any proposal to advance peace talks between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And some progress should be done because just the situation is very much deteriorating and very much acrimonious.
Mr. Kamalik, your thoughts on that lack of international response, maybe a more collective response from the Arab world could help change things.
Well, I would like to think it could help, and I do think that the Arab world has largely abandoned Israel. Largely abandoned Palestine, which I find very disappointing and indeed shameful. Saudi Arabia in particular is very happy to work with Israel in places like Yemen, where it's carrying out its own genocide. The Palestinians have very few friends left in the Arab world, which is quite worrisome. And I do think the world has done very little, particularly lately, to support the Palestinian people. And I think more needs to be done to support them before something even more disastrous happens.
All right, that's all the time we have for tonight's program. Allow me to thank my guests, human rights lawyer and author Daniel Kovalik from Pittsburgh, and also professor of George Washington University, Nabil Mikhail, joining us from Washington. And also special thanks to our viewers for watching the show. Join us again at the same time, same place for tomorrow night's debate. Bye for now.